Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Crazy story for you as we start off the second hour of the program. Do you guys see this? There's talk that BYU may be replacing Liberty as Coastal Carolina's opponent on the last minute details here. And the BYU equipment truck several hours ago tweeted that they were headed out on a Taco Bell run, which is a pretty funny line. But these equipment trucks potentially have to get all the way to a location to be ready to play a football game. And the amount of time that it would take from Utah to get all the way to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, is obviously pretty substantial. So that game could be being scheduled literally as we speak, depending on what Liberty's COVID-related situation is, as it pertains to this weekend's college football clash that is going to be where game day on ESPN is airing from, which is pretty wild. I mean, we schedule these college football games like every now and then. You'll get a, hey, we've scheduled a college football game for 2030 or something, you know, like an alert, your favorite program. They schedule these games like a decade in advance. And here with, 24 hours notice, it's possible that BYU is going to be playing against Coastal Carolina, which is pretty wild. So we'll follow that story and update you. And what a wild time, by the way. We had, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, Jamie Chadwell, the head coach of Coastal Carolina, on the program. And what's wild from his perspective, he's being pursued right now by South Carolina and by Vanderbilt. He's one of the guys that's being interviewed by both of those programs. And simultaneously, he may now have to pivot from preparing his team to go up against Liberty to suddenly now going up against undefeated BYU. And it's rare you have two undefeated teams play this late in the season. BYU got raked over the coals a little bit over their unwillingness to schedule Washington, and BYU hasn't been given a lot of respect so far in the college football playoff, but this would be pretty remarkable for BYU on the fly like this and for Coastal Carolina to both get a game scheduled with this short of notice. So keep your eyes on that storyline in general. Speaking of short notice, the Big Ten, on extremely short notice, trying to make a decision about what to do with Ohio State. And this is kind of long notice. 6 days after it was initially scheduled, we got a Wednesday afternoon football game. It felt wild to be sitting down on my couch, I don't know about you guys, watching a game that kicked off at 2:40 p.m. local time here, 3:40 on the East Coast, 12:40 on the West Coast, and be kicking back and watching the Steelers, who played awful in their game against the Ravens. Positive is another winning week for the Outkick six-pack of picks, even with the late touchdown for the Ravens. If you listened to us and got the Steelers -4, you still covered. Dub, another week of wins. I think we're now sitting, if I'm not mistaken, at 41-25 on the year in the Outkick six-pack.
Yeah, 41-25. That is a record that's going to be hard to match next season. There's no doubt about that. That's pretty outstanding stuff.
Yeah, we've had a lot of winning weeks, including a couple of weeks ago, a 6-0. We'll give you the Outkick six-pack of picks, as we always do, tomorrow in the final segment of the Friday edition of the program. So you can, kind of pin that that data down and be ready for it. In the meantime, we also won in college football, and we'll give you our college football picks to close out the program today in the final segment of the show. But big story that is out there, and I think it's a worthy of discussion story, is how would you assess the Steelers and their chances against the Chiefs. Are the Steelers the best team in the NFL, even though they are 11-0? Eddie Garcia, you are a Steeler fan. As you mentioned, the injury to Dupree could be a pretty massive hit. And you think about the matchup against the Kansas City Chiefs and the ability to get pressure on Patrick Mahomes with your front four. I think the only way you beat the Chiefs, all right, I'll say there's three ways to beat the Chiefs. One, you have just a really poor game from Patrick Mahomes because you are able to get pressure on him with your front four. Two, you have the ability to run the football, and therefore you can keep the ball away from the Chiefs and you get them to turn the ball over a couple of times in addition to not having the ball much. And three, you just say, screw it, we're going balls to the wall. We think we have a good enough offense that it doesn't even matter what our defense is able to do. We're going to try to score 40 on the Chiefs and beat them like 42-38 or something like that. Those are the three pathways, I would say, to beating the Chiefs. And I don't love any of them because, again, if you beat the Chiefs on the offensive side of the ball, you're saying basically, hey, our offense is as good or better than your offense. And I don't think many teams can say that. The ability to get pressure with your front four without blitzing because Mahomes picks apart the blitz is really hard to do. And there aren't very many teams that have that kind of talent. And frankly, there aren't a lot of teams that can run the football and just physically take over and dominate in a game. Do you think, Eddie Garcia, that the Steelers have the horses to beat the Chiefs, or are you with me in agreement that the best team in the NFL right now is the Chiefs?
Well, I think that's two different questions. Do I think the Steelers can beat the Chiefs? Yeah, I do think they can beat the Chiefs. Remember, this is not a five-game series or a seven-game series. It's one game. So, yeah, I think they can beat the Chiefs. But are the Chiefs the best team in the NFL, despite the Steelers being undefeated? I would say so, yes, because of Patrick Mahomes, because of their big play capability. Now, the Steelers cannot run the ball to save their lives, yep. But the short passing game is their running game, and they have the best short passing game in the NFL. They can use that to try and keep Patrick Mahomes off the field. The Bud Dupree injury is huge because teams are not able to double-team T.J. Watt or help out with a running back because of Bud Dupree on the other side. Now that's not going to be the case. T.J. Watt's going to see a lot of extra defenders to have to try and get through. Look, the Steelers are the best team in the NFL at creating turnovers. That's also a huge part of their success and would be something they would have to do to be able to beat the Chiefs. So, look, they have a shot, and I think it would be a good game. If you're going to ask me if I'm betting my money, I would bet the money on the Chiefs.
And it's kind of a tough spot, right? Because you're a Steelers fan and your team is 11-0, but it's almost like you can't even enjoy it because of the Bud Dupree injury and because the Chiefs just look so good, right? And there's some point in time where, and it's rare, you know, you get to be in this situation, but where your team is playing really, really well. I mean, they literally haven't lost a game so far this season, but you start to look ahead and you start to be a little bit nervous because things couldn't be any better for the Steelers. And yet you've got that looming, what I think is going to be a dynasty of the Kansas City Chiefs out there. It's almost like back in the day, even if your team was playing really well, you had the Patriots or you had the Colts out there and you feel a little bit like you're running straight as hard as you can into a brick wall. That's what I feel like as a Titans fan. Look, the Titans are set up right now to potentially be hosting a home playoff game for the first time since 2008. They've got a monster game now against the Browns. Both teams are 8-3. Titans are a 6-point favorite. If they can take care of business and get to 9-3, next couple of games are very winnable against the Jags and the Lions, I believe. So the Titans have a decent chance to be sitting at 11-3, which is a phenomenal record in the NFL. But I'm sitting around going, do I like our chances to be able to beat the Chiefs? No, because the Titans can't get any pressure with their pass rush. They have one of the worst pass rushes in the NFL. If you can't get to Patrick Mahomes, is there any way possible that the Titans, with their third down defensive futility and their inability to get to the passer, are going to beat the Chiefs? My answer is no. Like, I don't even see, even with Derrick Henry. I mean, you would just have to have the Chiefs go out and play such an improbably bad game in order for the Titans to be able to win, and I just don't see it happening. So it kind of undercuts my excitement over my team because the Chiefs are just so good, I don't see the Titans beating them. And it's fun to make the playoffs, but the Titans made the playoffs last year, so it's not like there's been a long lag. And it's fun to win games, but last year the Titans were in the AFC Championship game. The standard is, can you beat the Chiefs? And I just don't think very many teams in the AFC can beat the Chiefs, and I certainly don't think very many teams in the NFC either, which is why I'm close to saying, if you told me Patrick Mahomes was going to be healthy, because obviously that changes everything. If he tested positive for COVID, if he got injured like he did last year with the knee, if the kneecap, I think it was. If you told me that Patrick Mahomes was going to be healthy, I would take the Chiefs over every other team in the NFL right now. To me, the COVID issue or Mahomes getting injured is the only thing that's going to stop the Chiefs from winning another Super Bowl. I really do believe that. What about you, Danny G? Would you take the Chiefs or would you take the field right now if you knew Mahomes is going to be healthy?
If Mahomes is healthy, then you have to take the Chiefs. Although the Steelers' defense, like I pointed out last week, that is the difference maker, I think. And as Collinsworth kept harping on in yesterday's afternoon game, the fact that Big Ben gets rid of the ball so much better this season compared to previous years, I think that does give the Steelers' offense a pretty good chance against that weak, sometimes weak Kansas City defense. Pittsburgh does have the edge there, but anytime you have Mahomes, and we saw it against my favorite team, the Raiders had a really good formula against the Chiefs both times, but in that most recent game, even though they kept it close, it seemed like it took everything the Raiders had. It even affected them the next week in practice. They were flat, and then obviously they laid that egg against the Falcons, but it took everything the Raiders had just to stay close with Kansas City. And then Mahomes, he's out there looking like he's playing a backyard football game.
Yeah.
Just with ease, just tossing the ball around like, you know, he's playing a little Thanksgiving pickup game. And that's what's frustrating as a fan of any other team. The fact that the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes head and shoulders above every other NFL team.
I just think there's a lot of fans, even if your team is good, if you're the Bills, right? The Bills haven't, if you're a Bills fan listening to us right now, Bills haven't won a playoff game since 1995. And obviously the Patriots have owned the AFC East, so they're trending towards winning that division. And I know there are a lot of Bills fans and the Bills Mafia that are excited about that, but I think in the back of their mind, they probably feel the same way that I do as a Titans fan. We haven't won the division since 2008. Bills haven't won a playoff game since 1995, but I just feel like I'm on a bicycle pedaling as fast as I can directly into a brick wall. And that brick wall is Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, because I just don't see anybody being able to get past them. And even if you're a Steeler fan, and even if you're going to have a bye week, and even if you know you only have to win one game, they would be a home underdog against the Chiefs. And I think the Chiefs would be able to handle the Steelers based on what I've seen so far this season. Now, they're not going to play. And again, the home playoff advantage, home field advantage is going to be negligible because it's not like the weather difference in Kansas City versus Pittsburgh is likely to be of a seismic difference, right? And so as you kind of break down this scenario going forward, I don't see any sort of major reason for optimism. And you don't want to be sitting around like rooting for Patrick Mahomes to get a positive COVID test in the week before your playoff game in order to try to knock him out. And obviously you want him to be fine, and everybody's been fine with the with COVID so far in the NFL. But outside of that, again, if I said I told you that he was going to be 100% healthy and that he was going to be playing, I don't see anybody beating him. Now, I know, Dub, you're a gambler, and some people would say it's crazy in the NFL to take one team or the field, but I would go Chiefs if I knew Mahomes was going to be healthy against everybody else in the NFL right now. What would you do?
It's a tough call, and I would usually always take
every gambler would take the field if they're being honest, but I just think that's how dominant the Chiefs are right now.
They're a really, really good football team, and when you look at the AFC, I think the way to beat the Chiefs is to have a great running game, and yeah, the Steelers don't have a great running game. So if I'm looking in the AFC, honestly, the team that I think would potentially have the best formula to beat the Chiefs would be your Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, and I don't feel comfortable at all. I understand the argument because of what Derrick Henry is doing and what he did in the postseason last year against the Patriots and what he did against certainly the Ravens in winning two road games. And this year, the advantage would be, knock on wood, if the Titans win their division, they get to play the first game at home, and then they just have to win two road games. And road games, again, aren't really going to matter, but you could look at road games against teams like the Steelers, who the Titans played relatively evenly, and a road game against the Chiefs, theoretically, depending on how exactly the playoff seeding broke out. But even with that idea, I don't feel very confident or comfortable in the Titans being able to beat the Chiefs.
Yeah, it's hard to see. The only two teams I think would have a real actual shot against Kansas City are in the NFC, and I think it's Green Bay and New Orleans, because I think both those teams could potentially keep up.
They have
on the
better
offensive
defenses.
Side of the ball. Exactly. So out of the AFC, it's hard to see a scenario where the Chiefs aren't representing that conference in the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, I mean, I just, again, if something happens to Patrick Mahomes, I think there are three pathways, and to run through them again, the way you beat the Chiefs: front four pass rush, because you can't blitz, and you have to drop a lot of people into coverage because of what Kelce and Tyreek Hill can do to you. So front four pass rush, running game. You have to have a decent running game, I think, in order to be able to keep the ball out of the Chiefs' hands. And then you have to just hope that you get a couple of crazy bounces that go your way, fumbles that are unexpected, like we saw yesterday in the game. You get an inexplicable, you know, fumble on a punt return, right? That's how the Ravens scored their first touchdown. Maybe you get an awful defensive play for a 70-yard touchdown, like we saw yesterday too, from the Steelers, who didn't play well, dropped passes, tip ball interception, even though Mahomes doesn't throw very many picks. And again, I just don't see that as being very likely if you consider the way things are going so far. All right, when we come back, we'll be joined by Jeff Schwartz, who is his brother's actually on the Chiefs offensive line. We'll ask him that question: how do you beat the Chiefs? What did he think yesterday of the Steeler performance?
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joined now by Jeff Schwartz. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Schwartz. Not complicated there. His brother, Mitch, is on the Kansas City Chiefs. And you know, from a gambling perspective, Jeff, that usually if you say one team versus the field, almost always you would take the field. But right now, based on what I'm seeing from the Kansas City Chiefs and what I saw yesterday from the Steelers, I don't see anybody beating the Chiefs unless the Chiefs beat themselves. Would you take the Chiefs or the field right now to win the Super Bowl?
I would take the Chiefs. And you're right about typically the field bet is more
way
value.
Better. Yes.
The one concern I have with the Chiefs is that they're just not closing games well enough. Like, if you just look at, even go back to the Panthers game the 3 weeks ago, I think it was, you know, they're up by 9 with 2 minutes left, and then the Panthers score, and then the Chiefs have a 3-and-out. The Panthers had a 65-yard field goal to win the game. It wasn't close. But, you know, and even last weekend, like, they're up, score 17 points the first quarter, only 10 the rest of the game. They had the drop pass, which wasn't, it was kind of both Pat and me, Cole's fault. They're not closing out games. And I worry that when you get to the playoffs, that becomes a problem, right? So you look at it two ways. One is that it is an actual problem, but two, it's like they're kind of bored. I feel like they're just waiting to get to January and take off in January because they know it really matters. And right now, they're the Warriors. Like, they know they're good enough in any game, and they kind of just turn on in spurts throughout the game to win. But then when the playoffs come, they become a different team.
So if they were going to lose, and I don't mean lose because Patrick Mahomes tests positive for COVID, you know, and suddenly he's not able to play.
What's the
recipe to beat the Chiefs? Like, if you were trying to construct a team that is able to beat the Chiefs from your perspective, what would they need to do and what would they need to look like?
I think it's exactly what the Niners did last year, what the Chargers did this year. It's rush the passer with four, right?
Yep.
And it's play zone coverage and don't allow big plays down the field. Look, Tampa Bay, after they decided to stop playing man coverage, the last three quarters were good, right? They played zone and they hit Pat Mahomes. Like, that's, I know it's very simple, but that's the way to do it. And then offensively, you know, the Chiefs defense does kind of worry me. They don't rush the passer terribly well right now. They're not getting as many turnovers as they had last season. So I think that you really you can kind of move the ball on them. And then on the flip side, like I said, you just have to keep everything in front of you. Don't allow big plays and try to hit Pat Mahomes. It's only a couple teams can do that, right? Like the Bucs can do it. The Steelers can do it, but offensively, the Steelers, I don't know if they have enough offensively. Those are probably the two teams I think that the Chiefs would have to worry about.
All right, as we look ahead in the NFL, we just talked about the Chiefs in the AFC. Who do you think is the best team in the NFC?
Well, the best team is probably the Saints because of their defense right now. I mean, don't worry about Taysom Hill. He's just a nuisance right now for a few more weeks. So Drew Brees will take over that offense as soon as he's back. And their defense, though, has been really, really good, Clay. Like, in last month has been outstanding. And if they can get that defense to play that way throughout the rest of the season, I think I think the Saints are a team that the Chiefs would be worried about because offensively they'll score, really good offensive line, very balanced attack. Brees obviously is not, you know, the big moment's not a concern for him. He's done it many times before. And I think they would be a concern. If the Packers and Seahawks get this improved defensive play, which the Packers, they play the Bears. I don't know if they've improved defense. Seattle seems to have an improved defense.
Carlos Dunlap has made a big difference for them.
Yeah, but so has the Jamal Adams coming back healthy. And then they added Damien Snacks Harrison to play defensive tackle. Just his presence inside has just helped them on early down. So I think that there's a lot of positives there in Seattle. But offensively, though, Seattle has kind of gone back to like the boring offense that they've been with Pete Carroll for the last like 5 years. So they need to go back to this like let Russ cook offense.
Yeah, because Russell Wilson was the favorite, right, coming into probably the midway point of the NFL season nearly to win the MVP, and then everything just kind of fell apart, and the offense has gone back to – I mean, look, DK Metcalf had 170 yards receiving or whatever it was, and he may well be already the best wide receiver in the NFL. I mean, I think you could make that argument. Would you go with Metcalf as the best wide receiver in the NFL right now?
I still think like DeAndre Hopkins is part of the conversation.
Adams is in the conversation.
It's hard. I think outside of like defensive tackle and quarterback, where there's very clearly two best players, it's really hard to in my opinion, to just give someone the best title, right? Like there's a lot of great defensive ends, a lot of great cornerbacks, a lot of great wide receivers. And I just think it's hard to just say like, this guy's the best. When there's not a clear, like, you know, there's Aaron Donald and Pat Mahomes. They're clearly the two best players in those positions.
The biggest game, I would say, probably coming forward this weekend, which nobody would have anticipated being a big game, is the Browns going on the road against the Titans.
Yeah.
The Titans, I think, with the last two wins they've gotten, pretty dominant performance on the road against the Colts and certainly a big-time overtime win against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Have demonstrated they're pretty decent. Do you buy that the Browns are decent?
No, I do not. If you look at the numbers, they're not. Their negative 21 point differential is the worst in NFL history for a team who's 8-3 or better.
That's pretty crazy.
If you look at DVOA, which I use a lot, Football Outsiders, they're the worst 8-3 team they've ever charted. You can only play the teams in front of you, but. You know, they had a stretch there too. They played three home games in terrible weather, so they had two warm weather teams and Vegas beat them. But they had Vegas and they had Houston, and they started with Jacksonville to put teams away. I think this is going to be a rude awakening for them against Tennessee, who I think offensively, obviously Henry's done a great job. They're still missing something in the passing game. I don't know what it is quite, but obviously Henry's done a great job. I think the Browns will have a real big problem. Trying to stop him. The Browns have a little, below average rush defense. Myles Garrett coming back will help them just overall in defense. But I think they're kind of for a rude awakening this weekend when they play a really good football team, well-coached team on the road again. I think the Browns are in for some trouble.
We're talking to Jeff Shorts. Are you making your kids lunches as you're talking to us?
I'm making them breakfast. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. They're not awake yet.
They're awake. They're 6 and 4. Can they make pancakes by themselves?
No. I make my kids breakfast. I'm saying usually they're in the background chirping if you're not making breakfast fast enough.
No, they're not. My parents are here, so they're not. They're being entertained by them. But yeah, they're not. My daughter was screaming earlier. I don't know why. I think she got the wrong color cup of milk this morning.
That's a big deal.
Her tizzy.
Okay, let's shift to college football, where basically chaos has taken over, right? Everybody's just rewriting the rules as they see fit coming down the stretch. Notre Dame has a game in your state of North Carolina against Wake Forest, and the ACC says, hey, we don't need to play that game anymore. Florida State, because they canceled two games in a row on the day of the game. Clemson, one of those games. Clemson's just like, we're not traveling back to Tallahassee. So that game just gets thrown on the dustbin. And so if Virginia Tech doesn't upset Clemson, this would honestly be one of the biggest upsets in college football history if Syracuse beat Notre Dame, right? But assuming they win those games, it looks like the ACC is well set for two playoff teams.
Yeah.
Now the Big Ten is potentially going to rewrite their rules to allow Ohio State to get into the Big Ten title game. Should the Big Ten adjust their rules for Ohio State?
Why not, man? Everyone's adjusting their own rules for everything. Who cares, right? I mean, like it's a year where I'm just happy we're playing football. It was kind of cute, though, the SEC getting all bent out of shape of what the ACC did with scheduling, considering that, you know, like the ACC schedules Northwest State South to play Alabama the week before Auburn, right? And, like, they get upset with how the ACC is scheduling. It's kind of cute.
It is going to be, by the way, hold on, an incredible accomplishment, which I think the SEC is pretty focused on. If they manage to play 70 games, you know, they have a 10-game conference schedule. If they manage to play their entire conference schedule and the conference championship game, that's a pretty remarkable achievement.
Well, it's fabulous. I mean, and they should get credit for that. But it's just funny because they play 8 conference games and the conferences that play 9 have said to them for years, like, hey, man, to make this kind of fair for everyone, you should play 9 games. And now this year, they're upset with other conferences for not playing as many conference games. It's kind of ironic that that they've played a less conference games, and now this year, all of a sudden, they're upset that things aren't fair. It's just kind of like ironic, in my opinion, that they're complaining in all years of fairness in a COVID football season.
Yeah, I guess it would be that, and I think this is kind of intriguing, when you change the rules as the season is progressing, I think that becomes more difficult to justify than when you have everything set out in the first place to begin with. Now, having said that,
sure,
if I'm Alabama or I'm Florida and Florida beats Tennessee this weekend and Alabama beats LSU this weekend, as would be anticipated to happen, I'm looking around saying, why in the world do we need to go if we're Alabama to travel to Fayetteville, Arkansas, and why do I need, if I'm Florida, to host LSU? We already know we're going to the championship games. The only thing that could happen is, one, we have COVID issues, right, because of the travel, hotel, whatever else, or two, somebody gets injured in a game that's totally unnecessary in the larger scheme of things.
Yeah, I think it'd be fair if they were like, hey, you know, I'm not going to do this. I mean, the thing, the college football fan in me enjoys this a little bit because there's a possibility, and not in this specific case, but there are possibilities around the country in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 to, like, screw your rival. Like, there's a way where – now, Oregon lost to Oregon State, but if they hadn't lost, there was a way where Oregon could skip the game against Washington and by default win the Pac-12 North over Washington by skipping that game.
Right.
And obviously Michigan has a way to basically screw Ohio State. It's a weird year, man. Like, it's
It would be perfect if Ohio State's title dreams ended, not because they lost to Michigan, but because Michigan wasn't willing to play them because of COVID-related issues.
Oh, it'd be incredible because, you know, Ohio State was the big force to get back in the field, right?
And, yes.
And then, you know, Michigan basically screws them out of it. Now, I think Harbaugh would never do that. I can't imagine Harbaugh turning that opportunity to play a game, even if they're – you know, even if they do have COVID issues and even if they do lose by 40, I can't see him turning the game down. But it's fun to think about as a college football fan. I mean, this is like you always want to try to screw your rival, right? And this is a way to do it.
Particularly because, Jeff, we're not getting, like, at least in the NFL, they are releasing the names of everybody who's testing positive for COVID and they're giving their COVID list. And you can see how many different people are testing positive. In college football, we really don't know because they're not releasing that information. So until you get to kickoff time, basically, you don't know what guys may be out for the game for college football and or contact tracing and everything else, which makes it easier, in other words, to potentially say, hey, we can't play this week because of COVID, because the information is not out there publicly disseminated like it would be in the NFL.
I think that the outcome of this season, like the biggest thing we look back on, is I think that this might change injury designation for college football because I can't imagine that Vegas and people that gamble are going to put up with, like, you know, the injury report in the NFL, I know they say this, I think it's mostly true, is about letting people know who's not playing so they can wager on the game properly. I mean, like, there's no other reason that anyone needs it. It's not like a game plan. Like, you don't really change your game plan if someone's playing or not outside of the quarterback. I mean, we don't know up until the game who's not. It's ridiculous. Like, an hour before the game, like, oh, hey, we're down 3 offensive linemen, 2 defensive backs, and 8 running backs. You're like, what is this? I think it has to change. It's really – I don't know why. The NFL, to your point, has a list, and everyone's on it. No one's embarrassed to be on the list. No one's like, it's not a bad thing to be on the list, but they let everyone know, hey, these guys can't play this week. And the college football is always so secret. But I don't get the paranoia in college football. I really don't. They're always paranoid.
We're talking to Jeff Schwartz. Last question for you. How do you think you would have reacted in college if you had had a kicker situation where a girl comes over from the soccer team and at halftime she had addressed you and your teammates and told you basically you were all losers and that was the reason why, you know, your attitude was the reason why you were losing, your attitude on the sideline. How would you and your teammates on the Oregon Ducks when you were in college have reacted if that had happened?
So I liked everything about this story until I heard this part, because I had this happen actually in the NFL. We had a guy who had just shown up to our team via, I think, either a trade or free agent pickup in week 4. And we were really bad that year. We went 2-14 that season. And in his first week on the team, he's like a nobody. He wasn't like he came from a Super Bowl champion. He was an older veteran guy. We were on an 0-4 team, and he like got up at like, I don't know, maybe it was Saturday or Sunday, and like in the locker room gave this like impassioned speech to play better. And we all looked at each other like, yeah, what are you talking about? You haven't been here. Like, how can you stand up in the middle of the locker room and give a huge speech about winning or losing and what the team needs? You haven't even been here. You haven't even been through any losses yet. You haven't done any. So it just, I think that, and I'm anti, like, I don't even care if Ray Lewis is giving a public speech. I'm like anti player speech person, like nothing kind of gets me up like that. She should have done that, but I thought the rest of the story was so overblown, man. They needed a kicker. They found her. She kicked one kick. It was the only opportunity to kick. She did what they told her to do. Like, it was just the rest of the was whatever, but the halftime speech, she shouldn't have done that.
And then to tell everybody what she said in the halftime speech, and
I didn't even see what she said. I just was told that she did this on my own radio show. I didn't even bother to look it up. What did she tell them?
She told them that they were losers, and one of the reasons why they were losers was because they weren't cheering enough on the sideline when good things happen. In addition to the fact that she wasn't on the team, she asked to address the team, which, by the way, would be on the coach that he allowed her to address the team.
Because at halftime, though, the coaches like aren't in the locker room. They're like they're all doing adjustments. Like, there's like a
but
long period.
But surely
of time
she didn't just stand up and tell everybody to gather around without having talked to a coach beforehand, right?
I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why the coach would care at all if she spoke or not, because they're not like, they don't ask us if we can talk to our teammates.
In your entire career as a football player, has the kicker ever addressed the entire team?
No. And that's part of it too, right? It's not just like a boy or girl thing. It's like the kicker
he's the lowest man, like, on the totem pole in the locker room.
We don't hear, we don't get inspirational speeches from our kicker very often. I would say never, right, from a specialist, the long snapper. And what's funny is, like, on the Giants, our long snappers.
Hey, I got to go to break. Like, I want to get a kicker story from you. We'll come back here in a couple of minutes. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Jeff Schwartz with us. Jeff, I was asking if a kicker had ever asked to address any team you've been on in the NFL or college football and how it would be received if it did happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, with the Giants, we had Zach Yossi, who was our long snapper. He had been there for years. He won two Super Bowls. Like, he was just as respected as, like, Eli, right? Like, he in the locker room, he was our NFL PA rep. Like, he was – and he would never have gone up and given a speech like that. That was Eli's job to do. I can't believe that had happened. I didn't know that till like Monday or Tuesday either. It's so surprising to me.
Like, how would your teammates have reacted if a kicker had said, like, hey guys, gather around, you know, you guys are playing like crap and I don't like the energy that I'm seeing out there.
We probably just rolled our eyes. Like I did for a lot of other speeches. I just roll my eyes at people. I would roll my eyes at Ray Lewis' speech. I don't need that before a game. There was a great picture, by the way, of Mitch Trubisky giving a speech for the Bears, and there's a dude in the background just with like a stank face, like not even buying at all what he's saying. Like, it's some guys just don't need the pregame speech.
The eat the W speech from Jameis Winston wouldn't have had you playing better.
It definitely would not have. Like when I was with Eli in New York, Eli spoke like infrequently in front of the team like that. Like, but when he did, you knew it meant something, right? Because he didn't do it all the time. So when Eli got up in front of the team or spoke to us a lot of times on like Monday after a game, kind of alone as players, like you'd be like, okay, this means a lot for Eli to do this, and that felt different than just another player doing it. So. I did not know she did that, man. Like, that kind of, I liked the whole story until that. Like, that's kind of like,
What makes me believe it's such a setup and such a farce and such a stunt, because I bet that there was somebody recording her speech to the team and they're going to try to turn it into, you know, some sort of documentary about how incredible she was for that kick. And I mean, she kicked the ball one time. In a very mediocre fashion. Yeah.
Like, you can't make a documentary about her speech when they lose 40. I watched the second half of that game just to see if she could kick a field goal, because I was looking forward to watching her do it. And, Clay, it was some of the worst offensive football I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was so bad. Like, I understand that they might make a documentary just in general about her experience, whatever. But, like, the idea that they were going to film that down, 24-0 at halftime, like, I know that people do things for publicity at times. I get that that's part of what life is now. But, dude, I could be wrong about this. I just have a hard time imagining Derek Mason, who's 0-7, going to Sarah Fuller and being like, hey, can you give a halftime speech? Or Devin Fitzsimmons, especially this guy who coached me in Detroit. I know who Devin. Like, I can't imagine them going to her before the game. Like, can you give like a halftime speech, please?
Either she just out of her own bravado decided to give a halftime speech and nobody knew what was going to happen, which is crazy, right? For the kicker who's literally never stepped foot on the field yet at that point. She's been on the field for one play, but it didn't happen until after the half. For her to get in there and call out the team is crazy. And it is. Either way, right?
Oh, no, it's either way. I mean, I think the coach told her to do that. I guess I don't know why exactly they would tell her to do that, other than, I guess, to your point, to film with them. But Vanderbilt's not going to film anything about this. They're 41. They lost 41-0. They're 0-8.
Yeah, but you know first of all, thanks for coming on. You know how this works, Schwartz. They'll turn it into she kicked a 90-yard field goal to win the SEC championship before all is said and done when Disney gets done with this movie. They'll turn her into the greatest hero that's ever existed. When we come back, top of the third hour, we'll keep rolling. What do we learn from the Steelers, if anything? This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.